Welcome to the Dietitians Unplugged podcast with Aaron Flores and Glenys Oyston. Join us as we explore the idea of health and wellness from a new perspective. Each episode, we will explore topics that help you improve your health, body image, and fitness without obsessing on the scale or counting calories. We believe in health at every size, intuitive eating, and body positivity. In each new episode, we are going to help you build the confidence you need to ditch the scale and embrace your health without shaming your body.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Dietitians Unplugged with Aaron and Glenys. We are going to talk today about the dietary guidelines, the new ones that just were issued earlier in the year.
Yep.
And our thoughts about those.
Yeah. So it's funny. So these come out, in case you don't know, the dietary guidelines come out every 5 years and they're always revised. They look at the new science that's emerging. They look at different studies. But they also try to get public comment. So once they're sort of tweaking the guidelines, they are open for public comment. And then they review the comments and finally come to the final conclusions. And since they come out every 5 years, it's sort of like Star Wars for dietitians, right? We're always like, oh, what are they going to say this year? Like, what, you know, we don't want to like get too many spoilers, but we sort of want to know what's going to happen. And then every 5 years, it's like all the dietitians sort of like buy their early tickets, just like all the Star Wars fans. They get like super excited. And then it comes out and all we get to do is like talk about, oh my goodness, did you see the guidelines? Have you read the guidelines? What do you think of the guidelines? Oh, I don't know. Is Darth Vader really his father? I don't, and on and on and on. Right.
Right.
And this happens every 5 years. And so, so we thought it would be interesting to comment on them, to add our voice to this sort of circus of dietitians commenting on these guidelines.
Our two cents.
Mm-hmm. Well, since there are two of us, it's 4 cents.
4 cents, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if Canadian?
Well, it's going to be less now.
Right.
Yeah.
So 3 cents.
I appreciate that you were able to work in a Star Wars analogy with this.
Like, anytime.
I didn't know if you were going to be able to do it, and yet there it is.
There it is.
And it was good. And they've been doing these dietary guidelines since 1980, right? That's
right.
When the first ones came out.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So, you know, we're looking at, you know, 35 years of mm-hmm. recommendations. This is where we get like the pyramid, mm-hmm. right? The food pyramid came out of these guidelines, My Plate. And it sort of guides U.S. public health messages over the next 5 years.
Right.
I'll start off. The very first thing that is interesting to me is this is the first set of dietary, this is my second release of dietary guidelines since I've been a dietitian.
Right? Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. Woohoo. But it's the first one that's been released since I've really come to intuitive eating and health at every size. Last 5 years ago, if you were to talk to me and we were doing this podcast, I would have been one of those like Star Wars fanatics, right? I would have been like, oh my God, I can't believe they left out this. And I'm so happy they included this. And this is such a sign of things to change. And here I am today. And I'm like, meh.
And that's 5 years ago is when they introduced the My Plate, right?
I think so.
Because yes. I remember I was in school. I was just starting my dietetic courses. And they came up with My Plate. And I was like, well, that seems better than the pyramid, which is confusing as hell, I think, to everybody. Because we're not eating in a pyramid-shaped way. I don't know.
You're right.
But the My Plate, so did the My Plate excite you back then?
Yes. And to be honest, I like even today, like I think that there's a lot of helpful things about the visual of a plate, right? And looking mm-hmm. at what your plate is composed of. And I think that that's a very useful tool for a lot of people. And I use it in many different settings. So I like My Plate.
Mm-hmm. I found it less confusing, definitely.
Totally.
I was just coming to intuitive eating back then when it first came out. And so I was sort of feeling like the rebel, like, I don't want to eat like that. You know,
right.
I don't want somebody to tell me how to eat. And but I have to admit that at least the My Plate, if you're going to use a guideline, it makes a little bit more sense than anything.
Than anything else.
Past.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But again, these new ones came out and I sort of felt like, you know, all right, that's cool.
Nothing new.
nothing new. Yeah. And I'm not really that excited about it. You know, it's sort of, again, Star Wars analogy. It's sort of like the prequel movies, right? Episode 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
All right. They came out. I don't think I need to like see them over and over.
Nobody need to see those.
But I'm happy. Right. But I'm happy I at least saw it once. And that's how I sort of feel about these guidelines. I feel like I've seen them before. I feel like they sound very familiar. And I'm sure there are a ton of nuances in them. But I'm sort of like, I'm going to curse. I don't give a fuck. and that feels really weird.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that is so much. I think a lot of it has to do with intuitive eating and not wanting someone to tell me how many micrograms of, you know, something I need and how much of this I need. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm sort of left with this sort of very blah feeling.
Yeah. Looking kind of at them. Who cares?
Right.
Right. How is this different and why do we need it?
Exactly.
Well, I feel kind of the same way. I mean, to be honest, I'm not sure I ever got excited about any kind of dietary guidelines. And I feel the same, probably even more so now. I like to see what they're saying for sure. I feel like I need to know at least what they're saying. But I just can't get excited. But the other part of me this is the sort of rebellion part, I think, that comes with anytime somebody tells you what to do, you kind of say, well, I'm not going to do that. You know, that's what we've learned as dietitians, which is why we do a lot of motivational interviewing,
right,
to get people to make changes rather than just here's the delivery of the information. Now you go and do it. Be a good client or be a good patient and do it. And that's how I feel when I see these guidelines and somebody, this big authority, is sort of telling me, okay, here's what we've determined and you go and do it. And I go, I don't want to do that. Right. I want to do this other thing that's probably exactly like that, but I don't want to do that.
Yeah, they're not very motivational interviewing-esque,
no,
these guidelines. So maybe we should go over what the guidelines are.
Sure.
So people okay, so there are 5 guidelines that came out. We're 5 main guidelines. And then on the website, if you go to health.gov, you can look up all the information about how these were developed and more detail within each one. But on a high level, there are really 5 guidelines. And the first one is follow a healthy eating pattern across the lifespan.
Well, that's not too vague.
Right.
That's, I guess they go on to explain
they go on to explain stuff. Mm-hmm. And if we read from the website, it sort of says, all food and beverages and beverage choices matter. Choose a healthy eating pattern in an appropriate calorie level to help achieve and maintain a healthy body weight, support nutrition adequacy, and reduce the risk of chronic diseases. So I think they sort of boil it down to one sentence, like, follow a healthy diet.
Yeah.
Live really healthy.
Gee, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shocker. Okay. Let's go to number 2. Focus on variety, nutrient density, and amount.
Amount.
An
that's,
amount.
That, I mean, that it's key, and we can talk about that, what that means.
Yeah. Right. So, again, very vague, right? The website says, to meet nutrient needs within your calorie limits, choose a variety of nutrient-dense foods across and within all food groups in recommended amounts. So they're trying to say balance, variety, and moderation. they just made the words a little bit newer.
Yeah.
All right. The third is limit calories from added sugars and saturated fat and reduce sodium intake. So these are like the big 3, right, of things that you should
This is limit. Where it gets diety to me.
Yeah.
Where it's starting to say, don't eat these things.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Or eat less of these things. And I think that is the hardest thing for anybody to be able to carry out. You know, here, eat less of. And it's like, well, how do I eat less of the foods that I really like?
Right.
I'm not saying that it's not possible. And I'm not saying that changes aren't possible. They are. But I think the overall message when you hear eat less, I don't know.
Yeah.
The first thing I want to do is eat more.
Right.
I want to go out and eat a pack of bacon.
Right.
Salty, salty.
Salty bacon. Right. With maybe some syrup on
and
top.
I won't even like that, but I'm going to do it.
Right.
I'm not going to do it. But it's just to illustrate how that makes me feel. Like,
sure.
Tell me what to do.
And again, they sort of elaborate on the website to consume an eating pattern low in added sugars, saturated fats, and sodium. Cut back on foods and beverages higher in these components to amounts that fit within a healthy eating pattern. I think you're right. It's very diety, but I think they're trying to bring in some intuitive part to it, right? Maybe. They're trying to bring in some understanding what is a healthy pattern for you, which is nice. But in the end, it's like, but don't eat too much.
Right.
Right. Don't eat too much.
Yeah.
Okay. Number four is shift to a healthier food and beverage choices. Hmm. So is eat that healthy and
just drink water
and drink more water.
Well, basically what they're saying is drink water.
Right.
Because if you're looking at what is available for a beverage, it's usually, well, there's coffee and tea too.
Right.
As long as you're not adding sugar. I feel like their big emphasis is on added sugars right now.
Absolutely.
So if you're looking at beverages, there's soda, there's juices, there's Gatorade
right.
type drinks, you know, and what you are left with when you don't have those are usually coffee, tea, water, a variety of fancy vitamin type waters,
right.
all of that kind of stuff. But still, it really is limiting it.
Sure.
So,
absolutely.
And maybe that's okay. Maybe that's a good thing for some people. Maybe they need to hear that message.
Yeah.
I don't know. So.
Listen, I know if I drink more water than Coke in a day, I feel a little bit better.
Same here.
Right.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I never have a Coke every now and then.
Exactly.
But
I think, well, we can talk about the food fear that I think that this
right.
might bring up.
Yeah.
Inspire.
Yeah. Well, let's get to that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the fifth one is support healthy eating patterns for all. And what they mean by this is everyone has a role in helping create and support healthy eating patterns in a multiple of settings nationwide, from the home to school to work to the community. Which is, I mean, this is something I actually sort of would probably think is a pretty helpful thing to understand that, again, food touches many parts of our lives. It doesn't just happen, you know, in our house, at the table, in our own refrigerator. It mm-hmm. happens in many different ways.
Right. And that we do eat, you know, individually.
Yeah.
But really we are connected to this larger community where
absolutely.
We aren't all necessarily completely responsible, I feel like, for the amount of soda that say that's out there.
Yeah.
Or the amount of, you know, I think that when they're saying support it, obviously, they're meaning in the broader sense. When you go out into the world,
yeah.
what's available.
Exactly.
So,
yeah. So those are like the main guidelines. And, you know, anytime these guidelines come out, I have to admit, I think just like we sort of talked about in previous episodes, I'm not like the guy who's going to dive into a mound of research and be totally happy, right? I mm-hmm. don't have that skill as well as some other dietitians and healthcare providers and researchers. And I don't have the skills to sort of look at how these guidelines came about. And that's why I like people like Mary Nessel, because she is very good at sort of sifting through the politics of it. And she writes a really, she's written many books on the topic,
mm-hmm.
but writes a website or writes a blog on a website called foodpolitics.org, I believe. And she did a really interesting sort of take on analyzing these guidelines. And I think what I'll boil down a lot of what she says is how much politics there is in this process
mm-hmm.
and how much of the real guidelines that probably if they were unfiltered by a political process and by lobbying, how these guidelines would look different if there wasn't that influence.
And would we have them at all? I wonder.
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't know. I bet you we would have them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's my just gut, is that we'd probably have them, but they'd probably say what they really want them to say, which is don't eat as much red meat and probably don't drink as much Coke.
Right. Eat some vegetables.
Right.
Eat some fruit and vegetables.
But they can't say that because of the beef lobby and the sugar lobby.
Right.
And so I think from like the nerd, dietitian nerd aspect of my life, that's really interesting, right? The whole politics of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm left with the individual. Like, what is the individual Joe Schmo in you know, Kansas really get about the guidelines? And that's the important thing, is how does it translate into the individual?
Right. And I think some dietitians, some intuitive eating dietitians or health at every size minded dietitians sometimes are concerned about this kind of prescriptive advice becoming or inspiring disordered eating and distorted views around eating. And that's, I fall on that end of the spectrum. Some might be fine with it, but for me, I remain really skeptical about how these really benefit us and how they've helped. And so they started doing these in 1980, And I want to say, how much has our health improved? Now, for sure, our life expectancy has increased during that time. And there can be any number of reasons for that. Mm-hmm. Modern medical science and, yeah, and drugs and all that kind of thing. And maybe we have gotten healthier. I don't know. But we do hear a lot in the news how we're so unhealthy all the time. So I'm not really sure what to say. Are we healthier or are we not healthier?
Yeah.
And then where do the food guidelines, the dietary guidelines play into that? Have they really helped us at all? And I just don't know, because I actually don't. I also don't know anybody that really thinks about these when they eat.
I think that's a really important point, right? Is that, again, how do they really translate to the individual, right? Is someone really aware of these guidelines? And again, you're right. From our perspective, from intuitive eating and health at every size, we look at some of these and say, like, you're prescribing what to do. And as soon as someone hears that, they rebel against it. And I think what it does is it fuels a lot of our fear about foods. It fuels the sort of national feeling of, I can eat that. I shouldn't eat that, but I really want to eat that. And then when I do, I'm doing something really bad.
And I feel guilty about
Now I feel guilty about it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's interesting because, you know, these guidelines get reported on too. I mean, they're newsworthy, right? Especially in January, mm-hmm, especially in 2016, where people are trying to, you know, start a New Year's resolution or keep their New Year's resolution. They're like, what is the best diet for me? And I'm wondering, if we were to Google low sugar diet right now, what would come up?
A lot of hits.
I'm sure.
A lot of hits.
I'm sure. Maybe it's just here in LA, right? Maybe I just notice it because of, you know, where we're recording our podcast in LA, is that there's this intense, like I said, intense fear about doing anything wrong when it comes to food. And that, you know, I have to be perfect. I have to be vigilant. I have to make sure that when I put food in my mouth, it has to be organic. It has to be low in sugar. It can't be high in fat. It has to be non-GMO. It has to be grown within 45 miles of my house. It, you know, there are these rules that we sort of adopt that go beyond the guidelines, but I think they start with the guidelines.
They start with the idea that we need a prescription,
right,
for how to eat. And I do think a lot of that is that we live here in LA.
Yeah.
But I came from Northern California before this, and there was a lot of that there.
Yeah.
So I have to think that it probably is happening in the rest of the country too. Sort of this idea that we have to eat prescriptively. We have to eat organic or local or,
yeah,
pastured or whatever, you know, gently massaged food.
Right.
You know? I had a psychologist that made it feel good before we ate it.
Right.
So my
corn gets at least 2 weeks of therapy before I eat it. Just at least.
It screams when you bite into it. Totally. Anyway. Yeah. Yeah. but this is where the prescription starts.
Yeah.
This idea that we need this advice to, right, be able to eat. Otherwise, we would be clueless about, right, how to eat. And that's how I feel that this authoritative voice is coming down to us and saying, you need to eat this way.
Yeah.
You know, the king has spoken, kind of, yeah, thing. And I'm not anti-government or anything, but I just feel like I'm not sure we need the guidelines, period.
Yeah.
I kind of feel a little bit like, you know, heretical saying this, but I kind of feel like we don't need the government telling us how, especially when there are so many vested interests putting their fingers into it.
You know, I think bring up a good point, right, with how there is sort of the politics of it. I think part of me thinks I think we do need them on some, mm-hmm, level, right?
Okay.
I think there is a place for them. And I think when we think about, you know, like the benefits of these guidelines, right, is helping when it comes to maybe giving schools a guide of what they should feed, like for school lunch programs. I think maybe some of that might be helpful. I think there tends to be a place for them, but I'm wondering how we could tweak them, right, in a way where the guidelines are less prescriptive on some level and and more importantly, we can take them as really a broad brushstroke. But again, maybe the number six guideline is listen to your body.
Wouldn't that be revolutionary?
I mean, like, why can't the sixth guideline be, you know, in the end, nutrition is personal, and your guideline should be pay attention to how food makes you feel.
So I would totally be in favor of guidelines like that.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is what I heard, and I did read the blurb, when they came out in 2010 with the MyPlate, they had some text that said, we eat for many different reasons. And then it went on to list all the different reasons that we eat. But none of those reasons was eating for hunger. And I thought that was so telling that they're not even acknowledging that we have this internal regulation that could maybe give us a lot of information about how we should eat.
Yeah.
And how we could eat, and that these guidelines could be much more of just that, guidelines, right, rather than prescriptive. Because the part of the guidelines I don't like, I don't think you read them, was the 10% part of the sugar, the added sugar, and the less than 10% of saturated fats. And I just think it is, I don't even know how many calories I eat in a day. I have an idea from when I was in nutrition, you know, my nutrition classes, we had to calculate how many calories we ate by tracking. So I have an idea, but people are notoriously bad at calculating or tracking what they eat. So I don't really know how many. And to then have to calculate 10% of other nutrients on top of that, there's no way I could do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm left with this idea. Do I have to walk around being paranoid about, oh, was that 10%? Do I, you know, can I squeeze this in because I really like this cookie? But what else can I eat today? Or maybe I shouldn't have the cookie. It just kind of gets up in my head.
Yeah. No, you're right. And that's, you know, that's where, again, it's sort of what they do is they take, when they talk about what is a healthy eating pattern, that's where that sort of numbers come in, where they say consume less than 10% of your calories from added sugars, less than 10% of your calories from saturated fats, and then less than 2,300 milligrams of sodium.
Right.
So that's where those numbers sort of come into play. Which, like,
by the way, as a clinical dietitian, eating less than 2,300 milligrams of sodium is just not possible for most people.
It's super challenging.
It's unbelievably hard. You would be left with almost nothing.
Well, it basically means you better learn how to cook.
Yes, you better. And also to learn how to, like, really bland foods.
Yeah. You know, and again, maybe that's a nice guideline. I would support a guideline that would say, you know, learn how to cook some basics in your house. Get connected to your food in your house. I mean, you know, before we started recording, we were talking about, you know, cooking classes for my kids and things like that. And, you know, I think there's something really important about learning how to make something, you know, and that if I'm going to, you know, crack open a can of Campbell's chicken noodle soup, well, if I want to make that, I could actually have the skills to make that. And I understand the convenience of it, but I also understand, hey, if I make this, it actually is a whole different experience. Nutritionally, forget nutrition. It's a different experience because I was involved with it. Like, my hands were all over this, and I washed them. So don't worry, they were clean hands. But no, I mean, like, and then when I have that bowl of soup, like, I'm so much more connected to that bowl of soup because I made it. And I spent the 3 or 4 hours it takes to make a really decent bowl of chicken soup. And that's like a guideline I would totally love to see also.
Right. And to add to it, the nutrition part of it, you do have more control over what's going to go in it. So then you can make it, you know, lower sodium, that kind of thing. But I was also thinking, like, a lot of us work a lot of hours, or even if you just work a regular 8-hour day and you have a little commute on top of that, you're pretty tired when you get home. So the guideline where it's talking about how it's sort of everybody's responsibility, maybe we need to acknowledge that maybe people need to be supported in having more time to provide food for themselves.
Yeah.
Instead of, I mean, I know very few people now that work just 8 hours. It seems like everybody's working a lot more than that. Well, maybe we need to live in a world that pays people adequate amounts of money, that, you know, they only have to work 8 hours. Maybe we have, here's a radical idea. Maybe we have reduced work hour day. I mean, you know,
what if we were just, what if we just start with, you know, you have to leave your desk at lunch.
Yeah. You have to leave and go out.
You have to eat lunch.
And take a break.
And take a break.
Yeah.
And that's mandatory.
And nobody can come and bother you know, about work.
You know what's so funny is I talk to so many people who are in their work environment don't feel like they have permission to go eat outside or to go away from their desk. And they end up just sitting there at their desk eating and working. And one, that's really hard because you're not connected to eating at all. Forget about intuition. Because you're all stressed about work and you're, you know. But two, you don't get to decompress at all. And you're just, you're, I mean, like, it's like a full day of being in it. And you need to take a break and move away and to, like, get a breath of fresh air and get some perspective on even the little things each day.
And that's a great acknowledgement that, hey, food can make you healthy or it can, you know, hinder your health. But that's a tiny component of it. You know, this stress reduction that you're talking about. This being able to breathe and connect with your food and connect with everything else. This is where we need a bigger acknowledgement that this is a part of your health.
Yeah.
That the dietary guidelines are important, maybe, but that there are all these other components of your health. That if your life's not in order that way, if you are stressed out and eating through your lunch, whatever, you can eat as healthy as you want, but you are probably getting sick because we know stress causes disease, or at least, sorry, we know stress contributes to disease or is at least correlated with disease. So I won't say cause, but so I think that that is where they're missing. These are just sort of missing. And that's, I feel like that's where the slow food movement kind of comes in.
Yeah.
And says, all right, well, sure, guidelines, but let's talk about what it means to really eat and relax and connect with the world and life and whatever else.
Yeah. Is there one pie in the sky guideline you'd love to see in there?
I think it's what you said, which is listen to your internal signals of hunger and fullness or satiety.
Yeah.
To really connect with those. And I am always upset that there's just no, I mean, of course, we're still, this is a, still a fringe movement by and large.
Yeah.
And if there were only some acknowledgement that that is really important when we eat. And I think actually the dietary guidelines, than people constructing them, I actually think they feel quite the opposite. That people cannot be trusted and relied upon to trust their internal signals. So that's what I would love added. How about you?
You know, I think I would love something in there that would acknowledge how all of us, right? More importantly, the role of a family in good nutrition, right? And the importance of raising competent eaters, right? To use Ellen Satter's words, starts in the house and starts with a family meal. It starts with that slow food movement of, you know, eat dinner as a family. Whatever your family looks like, sit down with your family once or twice a week, maybe every night if you can, and enjoy a meal together, you know, and make food fun.
And that would be great if the people writing the guidelines would commit to supporting people and being able to do that.
Right.
You know, and saying maybe we need some big cultural changes.
Right.
To enable people to be able to do that.
Exactly.
And I think that would be great. So I think if I were to make up the guidelines, it would be honor your internal eating signals.
Yeah, don't get too specific because these are pretty vague.
Yeah.
Right.
And then I would say eat fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
Whatever you can.
Yeah.
I'd probably leave it at that.
Yeah.
There you go.
And so here's what we'll have to do is, you know, we're going to have a reunion. Make sure we're doing this in 5 years to see how much of this has changed in 5 years, if any.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, I'm guessing maybe some wording, right? But in general, they're probably pretty similar.
Yeah, I feel like they just kind of, it's a shell game. They kind of change around the words a little bit and go, ta-da, these are really new.
Yeah.
So one thing that I just was reading in Harriet Brown's book, Body of Truth,
yeah,
which is a great book. She is talking about the dietary guidelines and how they started, and that it sort of went to health became about preventing disease instead of just having health itself being okay. It became about make sure you're going to eat to prevent disease.
Yeah.
That's how I was sort of understanding it. And a lot of the advice in these dietary guidelines is about, for instance, the sodium. That's a therapeutic diet for somebody with hypertension or with congestive heart failure. 2300, that's,
yeah.
I mean, that's going to really help them actually feel better. Yeah. For the rest of us, is it necessary to eat really low sodium? I don't think so. I mean, I think we should kind of avoid too high sodium because that can mess with things too.
Yeah.
That can mess with your bone health. So, yeah. I mean, they're writing this as though we're all diseased.
I think that's an interesting point is this, you know, it's written to prevent, not just to live longer and better, right? And that's why I sort of like the idea of blue zones a lot where it comes in because it's not, there's not a whole lot of prescriptive nature in blue zones. It's like, these are, you know, big things that you can do in your life to help you live longer and better.
And for people who haven't read that book, what are the, just briefly, what are the blue zones? I mean,
so the blue zones are pockets of communities throughout the world where there's a higher percentage of people who live to 100 or more than in other communities. And there's, I think, 5 or 6 identified throughout the world. There's Okinawa, Japan. There's Loma Linda, California. There's Sardinia. And I think there's one in Costa Rica. And then I think Greece or Sardinia. Did I say Sardinia?
Sardinia, yeah. Somewhere else over there where they get to stare at the blue sea
right.
all day long.
But, you know, it's a brilliant book by Dan Buettner where he sort of looks at all these communities and what are the commonalities. And in essence, you know, the things that resonate with me when I hear that, those are guidelines, in essence, right, for not preventing, but for having longevity and living to your fullest. And the things that are in there that are so important are things like being connected to other people, having a purpose in life, understanding when you are full, right, and leaving some food on the plate when you're done. Eating mostly plants, enjoying a glass of wine every now and then for those that can. So, you know, there's a lot of big picture things in there, but they're all, none of them are like, don't have too much sugar in your soda, right? It's all very top level stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think those things resonate.
Yeah.
So 5 years you'll come back and we'll do another episode on our guidelines.
Yeah, aren't we still going to be doing this in 5 years?
Well, totally. I'm just making, just in case we're not, right? You have a date. 5 years from now.
Yes.
We're going to be doing this again.
The new guidelines.
Talking about 2021, the new guidelines.
Yeah, it's not a plate anymore. It's a bowl.
It's a bowl.
And you have to eat everything with a spoon.
Chopsticks.
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 Because that makes you eat slower if you're not good at it.
Exactly. Yeah. Slow down.
That actually reminds me of a good point. Something that happened when the My Plate came out.
Yeah.
And one of my really good friends that I went through my dietetics program with is Chinese. And she is also a very intuitive eater. And she kind of looked at that and scowled a little bit and was just like, well, not every meal I eat is going to be on a plate with vegetables here and starch here right. and meat here. Sometimes she eats a big bowl of soup and maybe she'll have some vegetables aside. Or maybe one meal she doesn't have as many vegetables, but the next meal is entirely vegetables. For her, that was so unbelievably prescriptive. And, right. you know, she ate family style a lot with her family.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of different plates available and different foods available. But she had a really broad variety of foods in her diet. We ate together a lot because we were in school all day. And she could really eat just anything. And she was very intuitive about it. And to her, that was just kind of restrictive. And she also believes in health at every size. And it was very sort of restrictive for her. And she just thought, some people aren't just going to, you know, if you have a quesadilla, your vegetables might be in there. So is your protein. Your starch is on the outside. It's like a wrap. So I think that that's the thing, is that when you see something like this My Plate, and you go, oh, I have to eat a plate that looks like this every time. The reality is we don't eat like that every day. Some days we have a ton of vegetables. Other days I'll speak for myself. Other days I don't have as much
Sure.
In the vegetable department, but I usually make up for it at some point. And I'm not looking at a daily dietary pattern. I'm looking at a weekly, maybe even a monthly pattern for myself. Because every day is going to be different. It depends on where I am and what access to food I have and that kind of thing. So exactly. Again, I think that intuitive eating is still going to be your best bet for getting a good dietary pattern.
Yeah.
That works for you.
And right.
Is healthy for you.
Right. Because in the end, you're listening to what makes you feel best.
Yeah. And I have not met very many intuitive eaters that are like, well, I'm an intuitive eater, but I just eat hot dogs all day long. Like, no.
Right.
you meet people are like, oh, yeah, once in a while I have a hot dog and sometimes I have a salad. And they have a big variety
yeah.
in their diet. Somebody who's eating hot dogs all day long is somebody who has a little bit of eating pathology going on. For whatever reason,
yeah.
I think. And they are so averse to other foods. So the intuitive eaters I meet have a really nice variety going on in their diet.
Exactly.
So, and that's the healthy pattern for them. And they know what they feel like. So if you don't eat vegetables, you kind of are going to feel it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You might just be kind of constipated totally. Or yeah. something, or your stomach might be upset or whatever. It's different. But if you really start listening, I think the body does crave what is good for it, which
yeah.
is a lot of plant-based yeah. foods, things that it seems intuitive to me that stuff that comes out of the ground and is available for us to eat, that's the stuff we should be eating.
Yeah. So. You know, the thing that reminded me of this, of that exact thing is I went away for a vacation to Mexico. We were really conscious of trying to not eat as much sort of foods that might have been washed in water that was not that clean. We were really concerned about getting sick, so we didn't have a whole lot of like salads and things like that. We were gone for 9 days. We come home, and my whole family, the first thing we ate when we got home was a huge salad, just like with like lettuce and vegetables that were fresh, crunchy, and you know, everyone was relishing in the fact that, oh, we get to have vegetables again. And just like, and you know, that was so interesting because that doesn't happen for a lot of people where they're like, oh, there's so much pleasure in this food. They feel like, oh, I have to eat it. I got to get a certain amount. And if I don't, I'm doing something wrong. So it was just like we found so much pleasure in these things because we didn't have them for so long.
And your body does crave balance.
Exactly.
Variety and moderation.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, yeah.
All right. So that's our sort of recap. Right? For 2015 guidelines. Anything else you sort of want to add there, Glennis?
Yeah, how do we feel about it in the end? Dietary guidelines, yay or nay? You're somewhere in the middle.
I'm still totally in the middle. I don't know. Like I said, I'll be honest. If I hadn't read them at all, I don't think I would be missing anything.
You probably would not treat your clients any differently or give them any different advice.
Right.
And they're, I'm the same.
So, you know.
I'm always going to say, get some vegetables in your diet.
Right.
That's, to me, the number one. If you can start there to make that kind of change, if you're just looking for pure diet changes to make or eating changes to make and you're not worried about the intuitive eating part.
Right.
I just start with getting some more vegetables if you can. If you're not eating enough, if you feel like you're not eating
yeah.
enough, but everybody finds their own level. So I guess I am still thinking we don't really need them, but I just wish the government would put the money into making sure that people had access to the foods that were best for us and, you know, maybe making vegetables a bit cheaper instead of having all the cheap processed foods that are available. To me, that would be money better spent.
Yeah, no, I think that's an excellent point in access.
Yeah.
Access is a huge problem. For a lot of people in our country. Absolutely.
So health.gov, if you're listening.
Right.
This is our wish list.
Yeah. Well, this is our public comment. So now it's up to us. Next cycle.
Uh-huh.
We need to be sure and comment.
Yeah.
That's our job.
Yeah, that's true. Because I didn't.
Right. Either did I. Full disclosure.
Oh,
but now we can do better.
We'll do better next,
exactly.
next time. Yeah.
All right. Well, this is Aaron for Glennis. This is, we'll sign off for on this episode. And stay tuned for the next episode of Dietitians Unplugged.
Thanks for listening.